Okay, I've got a question for Moggy. Moggy, you want to unmute?
Yes, please. Thank you, because I knew nothing about that, and you've explained it all quite clearly. but yes, I do have a question. A few years ago, a friend of mine's son died. He was just a young guy in his 20s. And his mum was quite surprised when he died to find that he got a few thousand in the bank. Now, she said he'd started with nothing. He had no money in the bank. But he was spending hours and hours every day sitting at a computer, sort of wheeling and dealing with, you know, this imaginary currency and Bitcoin and all this, just plucking money out of the air, and which I think is very, very sad. I think young people should be outside in the fresh air, not sitting in front of computers. But what I want to know is, how do you translate that or transfer all this imaginary money into real money in a bank account? Because that's what he'd managed to do. He'd managed to end up with a few thousand sitting in his bank account as a result of what he'd been doing on the computer. So can you explain that to us, please?
Oh, sorry, I muted myself then. That was silly. All right, thanks for that, Moggy. Yeah, you can put your hand down as well, Moggy, once you've done. Or I can do it, in fact. I've got the power to do that. Yeah, so I was talking about crypto exchanges, and this is the thing, is you can't take cryptocurrencies to a normal high street bank because they'll just tell you to get lost. They don't take cryptocurrencies. They don't recognise them, obviously. So this is where the crypto exchanges come in. So you take your cryptocurrency, whatever it is, and you put it in an exchange, and they will exchange it for something else, like their own currency. This is how I understand it. You can then use this to buy fiat currencies or ordinary currencies. You have to pay commission because it's a conversion rate in both directions. It's a bit similar to buying foreign currency and then using the foreign currency to buy your own currency back again. So you have to pay in both directions. That's my understanding. But never having done it myself, I couldn't tell you precisely how it works. But it does work, and it must work, because otherwise people wouldn't do it. So the ins and outs of how it works, I couldn't exactly tell you, Moggy. But it must be fairly straightforward because, you know, there was such a huge trade in it in the last couple of years. That probably doesn't sound like a very good explanation, but it's probably about the best I can do. So Howard's next.
Thanks, Paddy. That was a real tour de force. I think if it had been a physical meeting, we would have all been clapping for about 5 minutes.
I think you'd have fallen asleep, probably.
No, absolutely not. No. Well, got one question, though. Can you explain this concept of Bitcoin mining? What does it mean? Is actual physical mining taking place?
Okay, no, it's not at all. I did sort of mention this in passing, but I didn't really go into it. So the idea is you're going to produce, you need to produce new Bitcoins, but if you made it too easy, you would flood the market in new Bitcoins and depress the price through inflation. So what this mysterious guy Satoshi Nakamoto did was he took the idea of, you know, the decentralized ledger, the blockchain, and he added this difficulty parameter. He said, right, okay, I'm going to allow people to create new Bitcoins, but I'm going to make it incredibly hard to do it. So you have to get a really good computer to grind through calculations for, you know, ages and ages in order to finally produce a Bitcoin. So it's going to be really, really difficult. Not many people can do it, and it's going to take ages and require a lot of power. And that's how to prevent the currency from inflating. So that's what the process of grinding through all these billions of calculations using, by now, super, you know, teams of computers. That's what's called mining, because it's a bit kind of analogous to somebody underground, you know, picking their way through loads of slurry and slag and rock face to get a glimmer of the gold, of a gold seam. It's a bit like that. It's an awful lot of work to get not very much. And the more bitcoins that were sort of minted or produced, the harder the calculations got, so that now they've become, well, you know, to all intents and purposes, virtually impossible, requiring, according to one estimate, you know, the amount of energy that goes into mining bitcoins is 8 orders of magnitude more than the energy required to manage a normal centralized fiat currency in a country. 8 orders of magnitude more. So it's a bit.
So that's why it's often said that it's environmentally deleterious.
Yes, absolutely. It's ridiculous. The amount of energy worldwide last year was estimated to be required for mining was estimated to be equivalent to what New Zealand uses. So Moggy will be interested. It's probably bigger than that now. Okay, Paul Bennett, I've got a question.
Yeah. The place where I get my hair cut, they accept Bitcoin. And I asked the guy whether anybody ever paid by Bitcoin. And he said, yes. I think he said 3 people had. Did I want to be the next? I said, no. But what's the point of that from either the point of view of the barber or the customers? Is there any advantage in paying by Bitcoin rather than copper money?
Well, the short answer to that is no. And in fact, worse than no, it's downright silly, because the barber will work out at today's sort of currency trading rates how much a Bitcoin, how much, you know, let's say the barber charges a tenner, he'll work out how much is that in Bitcoin, charge you that amount in Bitcoin, but you will have had to pay a fee to an intermediary to get your Bitcoin converted into £10. So you will have had to pay more than a tenner in order to get the tenner instead of pay. Do you see what I mean? So, because you're having to pay an exchange rate. So actually, no, it's just bonkers. And anyone who wants to pay in Bitcoin, it's just because it's a faddish thing to do and it makes them feel like proper revolutionaries. So I hope that answers your question.
But perhaps I'll tell him that next time I get my hair cut there and see what he says.
Well, he might give you a bad haircut in that case.
Well, you'll know I have a bad haircut anyway.
Okay, I think Steve next. Steve?
Yeah, and if Paul hadn't said it, I would have. I'm still stuck with this idea, because you said that this computing that's going on is trying to sift through all this useless rubbish to get to the useful stuff. First question is, what's the useful stuff?
Well, the new Bitcoin. Let's imagine you've got the in this country we have the Royal Mint, and the Royal Mint produces new, let's forget digital currencies for a minute. Let's just imagine it's all paper and coins. And the Royal Mint is in charge of producing new coins and paper. And so that's a natural physical restriction on how much paper and coin can be issued, quite apart from any government legislation on that. There's a physical limitation on how much you can produce. But if you had no restrictions on the amount of bitcoins people could produce, then anyone could produce a bitcoin in 5 minutes flat on their own PC at home, and the world would suddenly be knee-deep in new virtual bitcoins, rendering the currency worthless overnight. So some way has to be found to slow this process down and make it, in fact, so difficult that you don't flood the world in new bitcoins or any other cryptocurrency. You make the process of production difficult, and by introducing a whole raft of utterly pointless calculations whose only purpose is to slow down the rate at which new bitcoins can be minted. Now, so it's an incredibly wasteful process. And it's the only thing that keeps cryptocurrencies having any value. Otherwise, they would all inflate stratospherically immediately and the entire system would be unusable. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Except you keep using this word, they've got any value.
They've got a value if people agree that it's got a value. It's just like anything in capitalism. If people agree that it's got a value and are willing to give you money for it, then it's got a value.
I would say it's saleable rather than it's got.
Well, I think that's splitting hairs. I really think that's, you know.
Right. No, I'm not trying to split. I'm basically just trying to get to the root of it. But you're talking about, well, you've got to prevent this inflation, but it's something that's just a complete load of guff anyway. So you start off with guff, and then you want to prevent them, want to restrict the amount of guff that's being created. I'll let that go, but I've just got, if you don't mind, I've got a supplementary question. Maybe some other people in this, in the meeting might be able to answer this. About 2 years ago, something like that, football clubs started getting interested in this, and flogging. I think it was these NFTs that they started getting interested in. There seemed to be a little bit of a bit of uproar about it. I don't know whether anybody knows in the meeting what happened to that. You know, I think the big clubs were sort of trying to push this idea, like these Trump virtual collection cards. Did anybody here buy one of those, by the way? No, I suppose you did. No.
Well, I didn't.
Right, no.
Okay.
But there were enough people, what was it, $45,000 or something like that for each one?
Don't know,
something. Something like that, anyway. And they claim that they were sold out. If you believe anything that bugger tells you, well, okay. Okay, that's me.
Are you talking about Donald Trump's collectibles now?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, apparently they sold out in a day.
We were told.
Well, this was reported in all the press, so I don't think, no, I think it's probably true. I mean, there's enough Trump supporters out there with money, and, you know, enough money and, you know, taste to do it.
Maybe. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Okay, so Vin's next.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Mate, what was this term again? The conversation stopping little expression there.
Oh, yeah, the thought terminating cliche.
Let's just write that down. That's a good one.
It is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's also something like, I mean, it's more generic. I mean, something like, well, you know, political correctness. You know, if you're being politically correct, it's a kind of ingenious way of stopping a conversation.
You're right. I thought something similar. I thought you can go on thinking of these all. It could be a new sort of Socialist Party game, couldn't it? Let's see how many we can write down in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Sorry, thought terminating
cliche.
Cliche, of course. Right. Yeah. What I was going to say was, you were saying about going a bit too far as cult wise. I kind of agree, but. Yeah, the BBC recently did that series of podcasts on this Bulgarian woman, Ignatova, who was sort of selling a cryptocurrency. I mean, from it looks like actually it wasn't a cryptocurrency. It was a Ponzi scheme disguised as a cryptocurrency. Mm. But, I mean, it did generate a... I mean, the thought... terminating cliche they used was haters. You know, if anyone made the slightest criticism of that, they were a hater. You know, and people would come back, and that term seems to have expanded into other spheres as well. But I think there is this kind of cadre within cryptocurrency that can be taken advantage of by people who can make a lot of money in a way that is rather like a cult. I mean, what was it called? OneCoin, I think. I mean, certainly it was very cult-like, and the way it was sold in places like in countries like in Africa, I think Uganda in particular was one place where, you know, the behaviour was very cult-like. So I wouldn't sort of like dismiss. Maybe the journalist was kind of inferring stuff, you know, from these sides, from the Ignatova thing. That's really what I wanted to say.
Okay. Yeah, on the haters thing, I quite like watching. I like watching films, and I like watching film critics on YouTube. There's one I like particularly. And, he points out that the word haters has now appeared quite often in being used by the makers of Hollywood films to respond to criticisms they don't like, particularly films that they make that feature a lot of diversity and, you know, sort of what some people call, you know, woke messaging. And so if you criticize anything about a film like that, the makers of the film sort of brand you as a hater, which is a sort of rather kind of short-sighted policy, because it just alienates the audience that they're trying to sell films to. So, but yeah, it becomes a bit of it's another one of these cliches, isn't it? That just is designed to shut people up. Mentioning the cult thing again, it occurs to me that, I mean, the response that, say, you know, Steve has, not being personal, Steve, but, you know, your kind of utter scepticism about the whole thing, quite understandable, really. They are probably, you know, the people who are into crypto are probably sort of painfully aware that they are a bit of a minority section of society, and they probably feel quite defensive, you know, over their bollocks coins and all the rest of it that the rest of us kind of laugh at. And so this kind of encourages this sense of closing ranks and this kind of cultist thing, to the extent that I think that that's a thing. I mean, like I say, I think that the FT journalist was maybe sort of overstating the case a bit. But then I don't know a lot of crypto investors, so I couldn't really say for sure whether it's overstated. But it just seems a bit unlikely to me. But okay. Steve's back again. You want to say something? Want to respond to something?
No, it's not a response to that. it's just when this, what's it called? This young lad in the Bahamas, what's he called? SBF or something.
Yeah.
I just find it rather amusing that as soon as something goes wrong with this type of thing, these people who have propounded the idea that it's some sort of anti-state, it's some sort of libertarian method, blah de blah de blah, we're all going to be free, immediately run back and say, can you just go and arrest that bugger, because we've just been screwed out of a load of cash. I don't suppose they've realised the irony of that. That brief observation.
I think a lot of them do, actually. They have realised that if you would put loads of money into a decentralised money system with no central authority and no regulation, then you've got absolutely sod-all legal comeback. You know, your money is just gone and there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, this is why people were jumping off bridges, because they'd lost their, you know, life savings on these things. And you know, there was no way to get this stuff back. And governments won't do anything because it's nothing to do with them, you know. So Alan's just posted in the meeting chat, he's just posted a link to a YouTube, he says, a bit of paper spoof, which I haven't seen, but I'm guessing this is a spoof on crypto, in quotes, products. Presumably in this case, it's a bit of paper. So, yeah, it's a spoof about, yeah, trying to get people to invest in, well, yeah, just basically nothing. I mean, something I didn't mention in the before is it kind of strikes me that a lot of people can't quite cope with the idea. If you sort of talk to people about crypto, I don't mean socialists, because I think that we sort of do understand about fiat currencies, but a lot of people can't quite grasp the idea of a virtual currency. You know, they've got this idea that somehow, you know, the currencies we use, dollars, yen, pounds, euro, they're somehow real currencies, they're real money, but crypto is, you know, pretend money. So they can't quite get their heads around how this can be. But of course, you know, we understand that, you know, all fiat currencies are in a sense sort of pretend money. In fact, yeah, and the whole of capitalism is built on, you know, a set of pretenses, really. You know, the pretense that one individual can, you know, privately own, you know, means of production, means of living, and thus deprive the rest of us. In a way, that's a sort of pretense. You know, the fact that we all share that pretense, or, you know, most people share that pretense, you know, doesn't alter the fact that it is at some level a kind of mass delusion. And so crypto is really only an extension of what capitalism already does. Okay, but enough philosophizing from me. Howard's got a point. Howard?
Paddy, if there's nothing that the state can do, how come this character's been arrested?
I think he's been arrested for fraud. Because even though the state doesn't regulate crypto exchanges as such, so it doesn't control, you know, who does what with the money within it, there are nevertheless laws about laws against fraud, against claiming that you got money when you haven't, and thus taking people's money after making fraudulent claims. I think that's what he's being sued for, making fraudulent claims. Because he claimed that he had, you know, that FTX had assets worth, you know, $32 billion, in fact. And then when the claims came in, when the withdrawals happened, as I mentioned, I think it was $6 billion dollars in 72 hours. Of course, he couldn't pay it because he didn't have that money. You know, what exactly he's being sued with, I'm not sure. Probably the state regulators will think of quite a few things. Is that an answer? I don't know if that's a decent answer. I'm not sure.
Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is. Okay, so I've got I've got Alan and then Adam, and then I've also got Mike Brown wants to put his hand up, hasn't quite figured out how to do it. Mike, if you go down to the bottom of your screen, look at the reactions menu, and you'll see in there's a raise hand option. If you would just want to do that, but I'll try and bring you in if you don't. Alan next. Alan?
Just a simple question, because I'm really lost when it comes to economics. How does this all relate to the Marxist concept of fictitious capital, which seems to be an apt term, since it is seemed to be an old fiction?
Okay, Alan. I've come across the term. We did look at this in Capital Volume 3, I think, but I don't feel qualified to give you a good answer to that. So, but as luck would have it, Adam is on next. So, Adam, before you make your point, do you want to just sort of tell us what fictitious capital is in Marxian terms, and whether or not it's different from crypto? I think it's different. It is different from crypto. But do you want to just tell us what fictitious capital is?
I think a better translation would be notional capital. It's just, for instance, the price of land is fixed by the rent over 20 years as a capital sum. So, I mean, that's what fictitious is translated as, but it's a notional sum which doesn't exist. It's as I say, just a capitalization of an income stream over 20 years, which is, I think, Bitcoin is something different. But in fact, the only reason I put my hand up was I had a text message from Mike Brown saying, how do I put my hand up? But you obviously answered that question. But while I've got the floor, I think one point that needs to be made is that cryptocurrency is the wrong word. They're not currencies. As you've explained in answer to Paul Bennett, it's more a crypto asset, if you like, which, you know, as you explained, it's based on scarcity, and people are gambling on the price going up and down. But it's as you say, right at the beginning, actually, it's like tulips, but it's not like gold, incidentally, which has a real value because it does involve people having to work to physically mine it. So I think cryptocurrency and word Bitcoin is the wrong word. They're not currencies in the proper sense of the word. They're assets, crypto assets.
Okay.
My hand down. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you can buy and sell with these assets. So, I mean, they can function as currencies. But as I mentioned earlier, they're increasingly, they're not being used for that, for the reasons that you just stated. Meanwhile, Mike Brown seems to have disappeared from Zoom, so he's perhaps given up in disgust or despair. So that's a shame. But John Cummings next.
Yes, I just wanted to say that there's at least one member of the capitalist class, probably a lot more, who kind of have a similar understanding to ourselves about this so-called asset. Warren Buffett, who has made a few useful observations about capitalism, one of which was that, yes, there is a class war and my class is winning. I think he said that in the context of we shouldn't push the workers too far, otherwise we may kill the goose that lays the golden egg. But with respect to the so-called asset of cryptocurrency, Buffett says it's an asset that doesn't produce anything. And if you just take into account that the way he uses asset is to refer to, say, a company or some such, and if you add on to that the associated labour power that it can deploy, then that is definitely an asset that doesn't produce anything that could possibly be a commodity as such, and therefore what the people are buying it are hoping to do is cash in at some future date when the price goes up, because the whole process is a mystery to them, because it's the price of the thing that matters. It doesn't necessarily have a value. Some of them may, but there's not a value in the same sense there is with commodities and capitalism. So in the Marxian sense, it's the price that goes up, as distinct from the actual value of it, which may be nil. So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, yeah, all right. Thanks, John. This is, yeah, I mean, what you're saying there is that's correct from a Marxian perspective, but as I've been discovering lately, of course, mainstream economists don't make any distinction between price and value, and they think this is a metaphysical distinction, but that's the side, that's by the by. Of course, you're right. I mean, you know, actual labour doesn't go into these things. Well, unless you count the poor sap sitting at the computer screen for hours and days on end, you know, sort of painfully mining these these coins. I don't know if that counts as labour. I suppose it does of a sort. I don't think there was any other anything else I could say to that. So anybody else? Steve again.
Yeah, I've just been looking up what that bank, I can't even remember its name now, but SBF.
FTX.
Well, wasn't he called Sam something or Sam BS? Anyway, apparently the state managed to grab him because what he's done is he's been apparently using investors' money to pay off FTX debts.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember from seeing other reports about this earlier that basically claiming that assets in this other company are part of that is FTX's actual capital, and it's all just smoke and mirrors. But basically, if you're going to cheat capitalists, the state will will be able to get at you somehow or other. The state will get at you, and that. So I mean, what could well happen now is that these so-called crypto exchanges will probably end up, if they don't just fall apart altogether, they'll end up with government regulation. It can be the only way. It's the only way that capitalist investors will allow them to exist. They will not put up with this possibility of being defrauded all the time. Stands to reason. All right, sorry, I shouldn't have said that, but that's all.
Thanks for that, and thanks for the contribution made by those dogs in the background. just mentioning FTX again, I was curious to know what happened to the other biggest crypto exchange, which I mentioned before, Binance, because that hasn't gone bust, and it's the biggest in the world. It was the one that was going to buy FTX, if you remember, until it pulled out. So presumably it's not been up to the same sort of dodgy activities that Sam Bankman-Fried was doing, borrowing money off himself, using depositors' funds to pay his own debts, this kind of carry-on. So presumably Binance have not been doing that. But when I looked earlier this evening to see what the news on Binance was, they're absolutely beset by all sorts of regulatory attention. Everybody's looking at Binance now to scrutinize it in great depth. It's being forced to submit to all sorts of inspections and things. So to respond to Steve's other point, I think there's absolutely certain that crypto exchanges are facing quite severe regulation by state regulators in the future. It's not just that capitalist investors won't put up with this sort of wild west. I'm not even sure it's capitalist investors that were investing in this in the first place. I think that this was mostly workers, as I mentioned before, hoping for a sort of get rich quick scheme. I think long time you know, rich capitalist investors weren't daft enough to invest money in crypto. I think they all saw it for what it was, as gigantic Ponzi scheme, just a basic con, you know, built on nothing, producing nothing, as John Cummings pointed out, you know, producing no value whatsoever.
Sorry, Barry, wait a minute. I thought you said that we're about three companies that own 50-odd% of Bitcoin.
Yeah, there are, yeah. Yeah.
Well, those three companies, who were they? Are they not capitalist groups that own this stuff, as is with the case of this Silvergate Bank?
I don't think so, no. I don't think no. so, no. no you, I don't know, I mean...
You think, that's a workers' property?
No, okay. Yeah, but they're not. No, I'm not, because they're not the people investing. They're the people who own the company. Like Satoshi Nakamoto is one behind one company that owns it. This guy that persons who may or may not exist owns about 1 million Bitcoin. So that's one body that owns a huge amount of Bitcoin. But there are other groups that also own. But no, I'm talking about your sort of your normal kind of rich investors.
Yes, I'm not. Sorry, I'm just being addressed. I'll just mute myself a minute.
Anyway, so I was saying, yeah, I think that. You know, Steve's right. These exchanges will be regulated in the future. But the thing about regulation is that if you regulate a cryptocurrency exchange, basically you're making it into a real bank. It's no different in that case from a real bank, because the whole attraction of cryptocurrencies was to escape the sort of centralized control that real banks have. This is the whole attraction of people investing in crypto in the first place. So, you know, but I think they will have to regulate them, because, as I mentioned before, unregulated exchanges are basically a front for money laundering. Crypto scammers use exchanges. I mean, one thing is that these exchanges often get hacked, and scammers and hackers can steal people's private keys. You remember I mentioned private public key encryption. Hackers can manage to find ways to break in, steal people's private keys and make off with all of the money in the process. And, you know, you'll remember news stories about absolutely millions and millions being just stolen, in the sort of press of an enter key from these places by hackers. So it's not secure. You don't get your money back if you lose it. And so for all sorts of reasons, this is just not how, the rich want to see capitalism being conducted, as well as the other reason, the media-friendly reason, which is, you know, that states, we want to protect our general public and, not allow them to get ripped off like this. Because when the public does get ripped off by a scam like this, the first thing they think is, you know, can I get compensated? Now, if the scam involves a normal credit card, the law says that the credit card company has to reimburse you. No such rule exists for crypto. So if you do get ripped off, you don't get reimbursed by anybody. So there are all kinds of reasons for regulation, but regulation is really a way of assimilating crypto into the normal everyday world of capitalism, with all its rules and laws and regulators and state scrutiny in place, sort of kind of defeating the object of crypto from many people's point of view. But I think it's pretty inevitable that will happen. Okay, anybody else got any thoughts? Somebody perhaps who hasn't said anything yet? Oh, Steve's back again. Go on. Steve? You got your hand up?
The illogicality of the position that they've ended up in.
Sorry, can you just start that sentence again, because half of it was missing.
Oh, right, I beg your pardon. Just to back up what you were saying before about the illogical position that these freedom seekers have been forced into by having to rely on the state to regulate what's going on. This is of course also the case with this stablecoin, which you mentioned, but you didn't tell people that these stablecoins are supposedly, whether it's true or not, tied to a currency like the dollar. So they're absolutely reliant on there's nothing different about these things at all.
The fact that they're tied to a sort of something like the dollar was why they were supposed to be stable, which is why people thought that Terra Luna couldn't collapse. But you know, because the Terra coin was tied to, I don't know if it was tied to the dollar or what's the unit of currency in South Korea? I can't remember. But anyway, it still did collapse. So that alleged link turned out not to work. So it's a bit like that old saying about, you know, anarchists who say abolish the police, and then they get the house burgled, and what do they do? Well, they call the police. So, yeah, it's a bit like that with crypto, isn't it? They're all on fire for this libertarian utopian capitalist ideal until the shit hits the fan, and then, you know, suddenly they want to appeal to authorities, but too late. John Cumming.
Just further on that point, for some, the odd member of the capitalist class who does invest in these so-called assets. Some of them, I think, like Elon Musk, was reputed to have had this thought that they should minimise the role of the state. But these capitalists, obviously, well, they don't have to be too swift in terms of understanding the society they live in. It's another kind of swiftness that matters to them. But those capitalists who say that are, you know, that they want to be, you know, minimise the state, it's just absolutely silly. And it's either silly or dishonest, because the capitalist class itself historically required the state to get into its exalted position. If there was no state, who would accept that, oh yes, we've just got to work for you, you're some rich bastard, and we'll just come and work in your mill? No, I don't think so. It was because of the coercive power of the state that the capitalists had captured that enabled them to do all they've done and accumulate such wealth as they have. So these capitalists, who some of whom may well honestly believe this nonsense, nevertheless are being quite unhistorical about how capitalism itself developed.
Very true, very true. Although I think that capitalists, even if they do understand the role of the state, probably they're like, they're like football teams at matches. You know, they're always complaining about the wrong decisions of the ref and this sort of thing. You know, everybody hates the referee, but, you know, they all generally agree they can't do without one. I suppose in any case, it ought to be added that a lot of the kind of well-known sort of rich people, I hesitate to call them capitalists. Technically, they are the capitalists in the sense that, yeah, okay, so they don't need to work for a living. But I'm thinking of people like celebs like Madonna and Justin Bieber, you know, they're ridiculously rich. These are the sort of people that have got behind crypto, or NFTs at any rate, and probably, you know, very likely, you know, don't really understand the history of capitalism or the function of the state or any of that sort of thing. You know, they just see, they know a good thing when they see it. It's going up in value. It's a great thing to get in on. All their friends are doing it. And plus, they're getting paid to endorse it to the fans. So there were apparently FTX was in negotiations to get Taylor Swift to sign a $100 million endorsement deal for FTX, but it didn't go through because FTX collapsed. But, you know, I... So, yeah, this is the sort of people, rich people, who do get involved in these things. Oh, back to John.
Yes, just a question. I just wonder if you or anyone else has seen this, but I've seen some videos on YouTube, I think it was, and it talks about, I think, the Good Morning Britain programme, which I don't watch, but they've claimed that certain wealthy people, capitalists like Bill Gates and so on, have been on the programme and showed people how they can invest in something that will make them loads of money. And, you know, it seems to appeal to this fetishism, this mysticism about becoming wealthy. And there's a guy who claims that he's devised a new system by using supercomputers that will enable people to place... Basically, what you're trying to do is beat the market. And because some of the time you win and some of the time you lose, if most of the time you can optimize it in such a way that most of the time your transactions are positive, then you will make money. And this is all, of course, not creating anything at all. All it's doing is taking advantage of some of the existing wealth on the stock exchange and basically betting on it like it were a casino. So I don't know if anyone else has seen these advertisements, but I would imagine a lot of people might be suckered into that because they just don't understand the nature of how wealth is, how you become wealthy. So they think that some people are inexplicably self-made men and women. People quite often believe that statement because they think there's something mystical about wealth, something magical. So I just wondered if anyone else has any experience of that.
All right, thanks, John. Well, I don't know of anybody else. I haven't seen these things myself. It occurred to me that, you know, I mean, what you say is right. I think people don't really understand how it all works and, you know, sort of, you know, there are a lot of people who probably aren't as sceptical as they need to be when it comes to, you know, new ideas, you know, sort of new get-rich-quit schemes that sound too good to be true. You know, they're always drumming into kids at school that, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But, you know, I think that, you know, any sort of natural scepticism can easily be overwhelmed by people's sort of, you know, real-world financial desperation. You know, I think desperation can sometimes overwhelm, you know, the normal rational process. People need ways to get out of capitalism and, you know, sort of hope triumphs over experience quite often. And also, I think we're new schemes are touting new technology that hasn't existed before. This plays into the idea that, OK, all the old get-rich schemes turned out to be complete failures and shams, but this is using new technology. It's something that's never been tried before. So maybe this will work where the old ones wouldn't work. You know, so I think putting new in front of things does make a lot of difference, and especially with technology, because, all right, people don't understand finance or economics, but they don't really understand technology either, so... You know, all of this combined, I think, is enough to persuade, you know, enough sort of desperate people that this might work and this might be worth investing in. Unfortunately, then people go and invest far too much and they invest money that they can't afford to lose, which, again, all financial advisors tell you not to do. But, yeah, there we go. Okay, Dougie's got his hand up. Dougie, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, it all seems to be a bit like gambling, really. You know, I mean, cryptocurrencies. I mean, a lot of workers gamble to try and get rich. A lot of people play the lottery because it's the only way they'll ever become rich or whatever. And, you know, it's a 1 in 20 million chance of winning the lottery or whatever, but they'll put the money on or whatever. And workers gamble. I think a lot of workers got involved with cryptocurrency. Well, tended to be young men got involved with cryptocurrency and things. And it's also to do with gambling, trying to get rich quick or whatever, or trying to make a bit of money or whatever. And gambling's detrimental to a lot of workers' health, really, you know. So I don't know. It's just something that I thought of, that a lot of this is just equivalent to gambling, really, you know.
Okay, well, I mean, it's not equivalent to gambling. It is gambling. There's no question about it. It is gambling. You know, gambling on the stock exchange, it's the same as gambling on the horses, except that the stakes are higher. And that's what you get with crypto. You know, what you might win a tenner in a slot machine, if you're lucky, or 50 quid on the GGs. On crypto, you might win £50,000, you know. But so, yeah, of course it's gambling, but it's just a question of degree. And, people don't expect to have a life-changing win on the horses or a football match or something. But, crypto. And as well, you know, people tell you can't lose. I mean, this is the thing about crypto. It's a new technology. It's you know, the value's going up and up and up. You know, you need to get in now because next week it'll be 30% higher in value. You know, and in that sense, it's not like the horses, where only one horse can win and the rest lose. The way it's sold to people is that you can all win. Just get in now and, you know, cash out in a month's time, you know, with twice as much money as you started with. You can all win. There are no losers. So, yeah. So that's how people get into it. I mean, there are people who play the stock exchange, and you can get online apps now to do it. You know, you can bet small amount. I wouldn't do it myself. I'm not into gambling at all. I tend to think the only people who win at gambling are the people who don't do it at all. But people do it, and you can bet fairly small amounts on these sort of online stock exchange apps, and people can get quite into that, and then they follow the stock prices the way that the racing punters follow the form of the individual horses. It's the same sort of, you know, same sort of process, really. And I think people can become quite obsessed with it all. Any other thoughts? Okay, well, it's 9:20 now, so we've gone on for, you know, best part of hour and a half, getting on for 2 hours. So I think if nobody's got anything further to say, I suppose it might be time to close the meeting and just remind you what's coming up. I'm just checking what's coming up. We've next week at the same time. It's Extinction Rebellion's plan to overthrow the government. Adam is giving that talk. Extinction Rebellion and its offshoots, including Just Stop Oil, believe that 3.5% of the population practicing determined civil disobedience can overthrow a government. Is this plan credible, and is it democratic? Okay, I think we can probably predict the answer to both those questions. But to hear more, tune in same time on Zoom next Friday, 7:30, for Adam's talk. And meanwhile, thank you all very much for attending.
Cheers, party. Cheers, all.